Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, November 27th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here at UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a cloudy and dark 36 degrees, kind of damp here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show Smart Mirror, AI, IBM, Cell Atlas, Bomb Sniffing Bees, and Plant Spies. We had talked about some crazy stuff before the holiday, and I hope everyone had a happy Turkey Day. And if you didn't have turkey, then I hope you had a nice long weekend. But Thursday and Friday, we ran a couple rebroads from a year ago. I thought it'd be interesting to see what we were talking about a year ago. And the one that ran on Friday was titled Avatars, Robots, AI Eyes, Face Profiling, and Mind Scanning. And that spent some time looking at that Baby X that was developed by the guy who had worked on the movie Avatar. And we're going to take a look at some avatars today and where some of that technology is headed. Now, one of the things that we've been looking at are humanoid-esque robots. We've looked in depth at Sophia and some of the things that are going on with her. I ran across a story the other day about why people readily accept robots when it is clear that they are not human. And there's this thing called the creepy factor, or uncanny valley, they call it, I guess. I guess there's a term for it. About when people look at robots that are a little too lifelike, they feel creeped out. They don't want to open their arms to the technology. And I've talked before about how anthropomorphizing the technology was going to bring it closer to us, but it seems that humans have a protection mechanism against that. So here's a story here about why people readily accept robots that do not look as human as possible. The positive aspect, of course they get a start there, that everyone highlights in replacing humans to carry out repetitive and hazardous tasks, such as working on production lines or in mine clearances. It's something that happens, but the question is, to what value does this have? Well, in theory, the leisure society, and that's what Kurzweil keeps telling us, we're going to be able to sit around and write poetry and think higher thoughts when the robots take over everything else. It beckons us, and we ought to have far more time to go to the beach and let the robots do all the work. But actual fact, computers and robots have been working with us or for us for over 20 years. I was talking to my dad about this weekend. Back in the 80s, they had started automating the assembly lines to make cars. I've known a lot about what was going on in manufacturing, and this is going to be now part of this industrial Internet of Things that is coming. But actual fact, computers and robots were working us for over 20 years. We spend no more time at the beach now than we did before. And now I notice, and that is the author, a dangerous shift. Previously, we designed a machine and we gave it a dull technical task to carry it out. And now we also assign the job of producing the technical know-how. And we've talked about that. Google's AI is writing its own AI without human programmers. That's going to put some more white-collar jobs out of work. So, are robots dangerous and serve no purpose? This woman asks. Well, that is not what I'm saying. Obviously, they serve some purpose. We're not going to send humans to step on mines, and we could send a machine instead. But to pose the question in terms of its use, to fail to pose it properly, the reply would always be positive. Of course it is, especially if you're trying to get your publication into some mainstream media. Robots will always be created to fulfill a use, like replacing humans. Well, what use should they serve? What kind of society we want, and what our idea of humanity is, what we defend. Elderly people in medical and social care facilities in Japan can play with a robot in the shape of a furry baby seal, which is capable of making facial expressions and sounds. Remember, those facial expressions are a big thing, and as they are feeding facial expressions into the machine, they will also not only be able to profile you, but they'll be able to see if you are lying or telling the truth. So I don't think it is a problem for people to accept machines And the issue might not be as tricky as that comparison. A robot will necessarily be better when measured against the criteria of the world of work, where everything is quantified, so value is only according to what can be counted, whether it is speed, performance, or productivity. That makes me think, hold on, because I hate when I get all these tabs set up first thing in the morning and then I can't see what the titles are, but there was one thing here. Oh, here we go. Here's a story that came out the 27th, which it says is today, but I think I saw this maybe yesterday. Anything you can do, AI can do better. So let's continue down this path. It's going to be so helpful. Let's keep creating it to take over all the jobs because it'll always be able to do it better. Once large law firms had armies of first-year law graduates combing documents for relevant information, now machines largely do it. New artificial intelligence diagnosed lung cancer 50% more accurately than radiology experts last year. We've talked about that as well. IBM Watson working on some of the cancer projects, and they're going to put oncologists and radiologists out of jobs as well. And last year, the U.S. Postal Service talked about deploying autonomous trucks by 2025. These are big signs of change precipitated by a wave of new AI resulting from a perfect storm of investments and developments of the past 5 years. And the coming developments will increasingly enable machines to do more mental and physical tasks faster, better, and cheaper than humans. I told you, that's it. Faster, better, cheaper. And the implications are profound. Artificial intelligence is the new electricity, says AI scientist Andrew Ng. I believe he's with Google. Now, correct me if I'm wrong there. And just as electrification transformed the world, so will artificial intelligence. It portends greater productivity and economic growth, and it'll help manage increasing complexities. Remember the smart cities. But it also has the potential to help the United States on the cutting edge of information and innovation, according to a 2016 report by the Executive Office of the President. This is a high-stakes race. Remember, Obama talked about AI is going to transform our country. China seeks dominance of global artificial intelligence industry and is planning a $150 billion AI sector for America. Second place is unaffordable. This is our Sputnik moment, and we must get it right. If the U.S. fails to improve at educating children and retraining adults with the skills needed in an increasingly AI-driven economy, the country risks leaving millions of Americans behind and losing its position as the global economic leader. Well, remember, there were a lot of people that have come out against AI, and one of them was Elon Musk, of course. Another one was Stephen Hawking. A new one that I just saw yesterday was Mark Cuban, a serial entrepreneur, and I think he owns one of the NBA teams as well right now. And he owned a tech distribution company back in the early 90s. Billionaire tech entrepreneur Mark Cuban has seen a ton of change since he first got into the technology business in 1982, but he argues that artificial intelligence is going to change everything 180 degrees. He warns that if the U.S. allows other countries to take the lead in AI, like China, then we will be SOL. SOL being an acronym that employs profanity to communicate urgency. I'm glad that they pointed that out to us. All of these things have happened that have changed how we do business, changed how we lived our lives, changed everything right to the internet. But what we are going to see with artificial intelligence dwarfs all of that, says Cuban in an interview with a hedge fund manager of Hyman Capital on Real Television. AI is expected to soon bring an increase in productivity, resulting in fewer jobs, all the while the population continues to grow. It is not a question of how it plays out over the next 100 years. It is a question of how it plays out over the next 10 or 20 years, right? Who knows what exactly, but I can tell you at the beginning which jobs are going to be replaced. I can tell you real estate is going to be displaced. I've talked to major companies and they're asking me, Mark, we're going to have all this extra real estate in all these towns because we won't have all these employees. What are we going to do with it? Do you have any ideas? Cuban sees AI as deflationary as the increased productivity brings the prices down. So then the question, when I sit down with these companies, we're not doing it just to commiserate on how bad things are going to be. The question is, what do we do? Cuban, who added that he spent a lot of time teaching himself about machine learning and writing code, explained that it used to be that people would use spreadsheets and postulate different variables and build models. Well, now smart people would think more variables, resulting in better probabilities. Machine learning, however, can think of infinitely more variables than people, and this is only the beginning, right? I've asked that question or stated that fact a million different times because this is only the beginning. So now let's fast forward 10 or 20 years, and it really starts to look horrifying. So then we start getting into something called generative artificial intelligence, where it starts to think, right? Well, that was the general AGI. And for the most part now, not all the way through, you will have to label everything. But here are my variables. When you got to give it to, you say, based off these variables that are labeled as such, and here's an unlimited number of opportunities, right? So based off of those, we're going to create biases and weights for them and let them come to the same conclusion. Well, let it give you a variety of conclusions, and then you decide. Going forward, we won't have to label anything, right? But for the time being, jobs will be created for people who can assist with labeling and variable definition, and this will be feeding the machine data. Those are the types of jobs that are going to be available over the next 5 or 10 years that didn't exist before. But they're kind of like Amazon warehouse jobs. They're brutal, right? And it's not anything negative toward Amazon. It's going to be good work. And then we're also going to have our Tennessee Valley Authority, where they make good public works. And we're going to have to make good jobs where we use programs like AmeriCorps just to walk kids to school or just to read to kids. We may have to tax robots, right? Well, that was something Bill Gates brought up a while ago. And regardless, nobody said Mark Cuban was a genius, but I thought it was interesting that he just comes out of the woodwork. Regardless, AI is going to continue to happen, and other countries are already investing, particularly in talents in those fields. Also, Putin says that the winner in AI controls the world. China puts together a future plan saying whoever dominates AI, and they are subsidizing Tencent, Alibaba, etc., right? Well, it's a race, and we cut our Office of Technology and Science down to one person who is an assistant to Peter Thiel. That's where we stand in America. Cuban made his first investment in a U.S.-based robotics company called Hire Robotics. The company rents and sells robots to businesses to replace people. That's nice. Thanks, Mark. I'm not saying it's a good thing for a bad thing. It's going to happen with or without me, but what I wanted to do was learn what was going on. Those building up a robotics industry here, investing in the AI industry, that's all new infrastructure, because if we don't, and if China or Russia wins those wars, well, then we're SOL, right? Cuban thinks that the first trillionaire is going to be somebody who comes up with something unique in AI. Now, where do we go from here? So all this development is happening. It's going to happen with or without Mark Cuban and his billions of dollars. So there's a story that I found out of Big Think. It tends to be a mainstream publication where they kind of tackle some large questions and put it in some simple terms. Well, here's a good title that caught my attention. We saw that people don't like robots that are very human-esque. They like them better when they're not. Well, how about designing a robot that you might want to have a beer with? Well, all right. Try to convince me. I recently, and that is the author, Joseph Coughlin from BigThink.com, I recently had a conversation with a colleague that works with me in the MIT Age Lab, and he specializes in AI machine learning. And as we walked and discussed his current work on autonomous vehicles, I asked him, where would you like to take your research? Without missing a beat, he responded, I would like to build a robot that you want to have a conversation with, unlike Jibo. Robots may be rapidly losing their novelty, and it seems like that in just a few years, they've become ubiquitous. Sometimes we don't even recognize that robots are living among us, and one of these things are science fiction, but they are now in nearly every discount store. Some are toys. Hasbro's Joy for All robots are designed to provide companionship to older adults, while Pero is the robotic seal we just heard about that serves as a therapeutic intervention with those suffering from PTSD or from dementia. It's a seal. Thanks to Amazon Echo, Google Home, and others, bots are making shopping lists, playing music, controlling home lighting and temperature, and even offering personal exercise routines. Other robots are vacuuming our floors and cutting our lawns. Most people see robots as complex devices to fulfill specific tasks, but beyond obvious applications in transportation, law enforcement, logistics, work, shopping, and healthcare, robotics will soon shape our most personal moments. Changing the global demographics and living patterns may provide a new role for AI, keeping us company. And today, nearly 30% of all households in the United States are households of one. So home alone living is pronounced in cities more than others. And for example, nearly half of all households in the cities of Atlanta and Washington, D.C. are single people living solo. In some parts of Europe, nearly half the households are comprised of a single person. And they report that over the next 14 years, households of one will increase faster than households of couples, families, or roommates. Nearly 120 million new single-person households will be formed worldwide over the next decade and a half. So that brings me back to my friend who plans to build a robot that you want to have a conversation with, and the emphasis is on want. Remember last week we looked at a product called Replika, Replika.ai, where you could build your own AI best friend by feeding it information. And I think you also let it scan your social media posts to get to know you so then it could converse with you. This is really a slippery slope for me. I don't know if I would want to be responsible for feeding my data into the machine, helping these machines get smarter and be able to mimic humans better. And we're going to get to that here in a few minutes. In a recent article in Wired magazine, it suggests that even robots designed for sex may be far less complex. We've talked about the sex bots, the design challenges associated with creating the intimacy one needs to feel and want to have a conversation. Wanting to have a conversation with someone depends on many factors. One of them is the likability of your conversational partner. So well beyond the formidable technical requirements of engineering a conversational robot that's equally as challenging is the element of likability. Understanding what behaviors, physical features, and other elements contribute to what makes us want to share a few moments with someone or something will require integrating insights from social and behavioral sciences as well as the arts and humanities. So does appearance matter? What would you like your bot to look like? Should it have a human form, somewhere between cool and creepy? Or some people might prefer an animal shape to a favorite pet. Others might want an entirely novel creature. And would the gender matter? Just as in online navigation systems allow users to choose the gender of the voice providing directions, what gender would you want your conversation buddy to have? And then there's the conversation itself. Do you want to talk about news, weather, money, sports, people, videos, romance, or should your robot have a sense of humor? And I think this is a lot of what that Replika is like. Robot conversations will demand an entirely new level of interpersonal trust as you give it all your deepest, darkest secrets. And beer bot chats, are they confidential? Would you expect your robot companion to keep all your secrets? And after hearing your secrets, would you want advice from your AI? Well, if you find the idea of having conversations in a beer or any other beverage of your choice with a robot interesting, help us identify the elements of your ideal robot. We are collecting information via survey. Click right here. This is not a scientific poll, but rather a thought exercise to inspire and inform our thinking. Likeability is profoundly a human perception inequality, and if we are to develop a robot that we want to spend time with and speak with, not just give orders to, like, Alexa, turn on the lights, we will need better understanding of those human qualities before we can engineer them into our new AI friends at home. Now, this is where a company that I talked about in the rebroad on Friday comes in. This was a company called Soul Machines, if you guys remember me talking about this. And the guy who created Soul Machines is an engineer that creates artificial intelligence. He worked on the movie Avatar, and he was creating a side project called Baby X that made a, I would want to say, anatomically correct, and that would be all the way from the brainstem in 3D virtual reality all the way down to the face, to allow it to learn like a human and to interact and react by looking at you with its robot googly eyes through the cameras on the screen, to become emotionally responsive to the human that was teaching it. This company is out of Auckland, New Zealand, Soul Machines, a developer of intelligent, emotionally responsive avatars, has announced that it raised $7.5 million in Series A financing. This investment will allow Soul Machines to deliver on its vision of humanizing technology to create intelligent and emotionally responsive human-like avatars that augment and enrich the user experience for customers and markets adopting artificial intelligence-based platforms. Soul Machine is built on the technology behind Baby X, and we're going to look at Baby X in detail. The very first avatar created by the company's founder and CEO, Dr. Mark Sager, who is a two-time Oscar-winning scientist, and that would be on the movie Avatar, and his engineering research team at the Laboratory for Animate Technologies is based in Auckland's Bioengineering Institute at the University of Auckland. Mark's work on Baby X is leading the way in development of completely new interaction models between humans and machines. And with the rapidly accelerating pace of intelligent assistance and productivity, applications using deep learning, Mark and his team provide an emotional and social reasoning platform to existing and developing intelligence of the AI industry. Mark and his research team have wowed leading technology influencers around the world with Baby X. And their investor, Horizon Ventures, was introduced to the technology in a recent tour of the university, and they were so impressed that the team made the decision to invest almost immediately. Horizon Ventures makes for the perfect investment partner, and their track record is in artificial intelligence as well as AR and VR. Experienced New Zealand-based technology entrepreneur Greg Cross has also joined Soul Machines as part of the transaction to launch the new company and accelerate commercialization. So let's go with Soul Machines. So we are going to take a look at Baby X as the intelligent toddler simulation, and it is getting smarter every single day. Holding a children's picture book up to his computer screen, a researcher for Soul Machines has the baby on the screen coo and crew into the microphone and the webcam. And on the other side of the screen, the toddler mimics his facial expressions, reads simple words aloud, and even plays basic video games with the scientist. Known only as Baby X, this 3D simulated human child is getting smarter every day. And when you watch the video, they kind of zoom in, and you can zoom in as to what is going on inside of the brain. And they talk about this here. An experiment in machine learning, Baby X is a program that imitates the biological processes of learning, including association, conditioning, and reinforcement learning. And by algorithmically stimulating the chemical reactions of the human brain, think of dopamine release or increased oxytocin levels, and then connecting them with sensory digital input. When Baby X learns to imitate facial expressions, for instance, software developers write protocols for the variable time intervals between action and response. So they are effectively teaching the child through code. While engineering such a program is no cakewalk, because they are engineering the biochemical processes behind this teaching, the result is an adorable, giggling digital baby with an uncanny ability to learn through interactions. The latest experiment from the laboratory has highlighted Baby X's ability to read simple words aloud and identify objects that correlate to those same words. A far cry from the self-improving, self-replicating programs we all know and love to fear, like from Google, Baby X soars beyond the uncanny valley. That's what we were talking about before, looking adorably confused when it doesn't understand signals and utterly joyful when it responds correctly. It almost brings a tear to our eye to watch Baby X grow up so fast. And we just hope that when the singularity comes, Baby X remembers us for its good times. So there we have it, Baby X. So this brought me to this next artificial intelligence that I ran across this morning. And there was an older story from 2014 that it talked about some of these technologies that were going out stealing facial renderings and voice recordings from the internet to make avatars. And now Furhat has come a long way. This is Furhat. I watched this video and they use these 3D printed scans of somebody's face with all the proper contouring, and they put it onto this framework, and inside there's some mirrors and some a little mini projector that then takes the person's face and projects it from inside onto this 3D printed model that makes it look pretty damn scarily realistic. And then they put this fur hat with ears on it, which makes it kind of amusing, kind of anthropomorphic, looking like a person, but not quite, almost iRobot-ish. But this is fur hat. The way we interact with technology today is fundamentally different from the way we interact with humans. Today we use phones, tablets, laptops, we click on buttons, menus, and windows. We use a keyboard and a mouse to transfer our requests to the machines. To date, there is no interface yet that can fill the gap where computers are able to interact with humans on human terms, except maybe Baby X. Furhat is a research breakthrough and an innovation driven with that vision to build a human-like interface with social intelligence. Seems to be all the rage now. An interface with personality and intention, an interface that understands the human social protocol, language, gestures, and dynamics, an interface that is built from the bottom up on computational models of engagement, group dynamics, joint attention, and with social joint attention and with social intentions. We believe that such an interface is the next revolution in computer-human interaction. So they want to suck you into the machine, an interface that disrupts the way we engage and interact with information and can have critical social impact in many verticals, as well as education, healthcare, therapy, entertainment, and many situations where social skills are needed. Furhat is about understanding how to make machines come to life. And no one who has met Furhat has been left untouched. Furhat brings the world's most recent advances in sensory and cloud services together in a machine that appears to be alive. Building Furhat requires a complete rethinking of computation from the ground up and reimagining the role that computers can play with humans. It's going to be your best friend. This is Furhat, a robot with a character and a personality, a platform to build socially aware spoken conversations with computers so you feed it all of your deep, dark secrets. Guys, do you see? This is the next step forward to feeding everything that is you into a digital interface. And the more friendly they make it, the more conversational, the more human-like. So you start to converse with it and you forget that it is digital. The better the software is going to get at replicating humans and learning all the chinks in the human armor that make us unique. Furhat software itself is unique. Furhat runs on Furhat OS, an operating system and a programming platform that are built upon the principles of human behavior as their building blocks. Furhat comes with APIs that allow developers and researchers to connect it to third-party software, such as cloud services and intelligent sensors. It is available today with an SDK. I was looking for a price, they didn't have one. And support for large sets of the world's most popular sensors and the AI API, including speech recognition, speech synthesis, and person tracking. So I don't know what they're going to do with person tracking. Now, talking about avatars and creating things that are very human-like and believable, I ran across something in my feed this morning about James Cameron, who was the director on the movie Avatar, which is where the guy that created the Baby X came from. And James Cameron is working on a new Avatar sequel So again, using Hollywood to help suck us into the machine. And he is also working on a future of his Terminator franchise. Terminator taught you all you needed to know about the future of AI. So I don't really want to get into movies, but they are working on some new renditions to help normalize the technology and make you want to be a part of the machine. Now, Elon Musk, of course, came out again, not once but twice this weekend. One of the things he said last week before the holiday was that AI is highly likely to destroy humans. He's been warning this for a while, but he's getting more and more vocal about it. Elon Musk believes it is highly likely that artificial intelligence will be a threat to people. In his opinion, there is a very small chance that humans will be safe from such systems. He says that there is maybe a 5 to 10% chance of success of making AI safe. So let that be a lesson to you. Because after Atlas, that new robot video we talked about last week where he was doing the backflip came out, Elon Musk put a tweet out that said something like, "This is nothing new. In a few years, that bot will move so fast that you will need a strobe light just to see it." So sweet dreams, people. And that's what's going to happen. They're going to become smarter, better, faster. And they will be controlled by some sort of AI in the cloud. Who knows who's actually going to be controlling it? And everything AI can do, humans cannot do better. Remember that. Except for maybe piloting a drone. This was in The Hindu. This is a publication out of India. Human pilot beats AI in NASA's newest drone race. So the meatbags chalked one up for themselves. Why the AI and human pilot started out with similar lap times. After a dozen laps or so, the latter learned the course and became more creative and nimble. And that would be the human. An expert human pilot was successfully able to beat flying drones controlled by artificial intelligence in a race organized by NASA. And however, and that's because the kid's been playing video games, drone video games for 20 years. However, the AI-driven drones were more consistent in their performance than the human. Drone racing is a high-speed sport demanding instinctive reflexes. And researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in the U.S. put their work to the test recently, timing laps through a twisted obstacle course, like soon to be in a city or inside of your homes. They raced drones controlled by AI against world-class drone pilots Ken Liu. The team then built three custom drones that were dubbed Batman, Joker, and Nightwing, and they developed complex algorithms for the drones that needed to fly at high rates of speed while avoiding obstacles. The drones were built to race specifications that could easily go as fast as 129 kilometers per hour in a straight line. However, on the obstacle course that they set up in a warehouse, they could only fly about 48 to 64 kilometers an hour before they needed to apply the brakes. "We pitted our algorithms against a human who flies a lot more by feel, and you could actually see that the AI flies the drone more smoothly around the course, where human pilots tend to accelerate aggressively, so their path is jerkier." These technologies in the future may allow drones to check inventory in our warehouses, so don't worry about those high-paying Amazon warehouse jobs, or assist search and rescue operations at a disaster site. We just saw one story that I don't know if I covered that. They just recovered an old lady who got lost by drones. That was a few weeks ago. All right, so now what? Well, in talking about fur hat and being able to recreate somebody's face by 3D scanning and printing a mask and then holographically projecting images of their face inside of that mask, artificial intelligence is also primed for voice recordings. We've talked about that before, how they can, there's a Photoshop for voice that only needs like 20 minutes of your voice to reproduce it, looking at all the different inflections. Well, there is a new artificial intelligence platform that has just been launched, marketed as an in-meeting intelligence that can listen, make notes, and identify key moments in a conversation that occur in a meeting as a follow-up to them. This new device comes from Voicera, formerly WorkFit, and it is designed to be released as a beta right now. The mission of the company is with centering on meetings and making the process that stems from them more efficient. With meetings, unlike emails, they're separated from the enterprise workflow. Now, if I remember Voicera, we used to deal with them when I was working in the telecom industry. Voicera had a badge for healthcare that was almost like a Star Trek communicator, and you could connect it via wireless technology to your network. And then there was a voice recognition database that went along with that, so you could tap it on your chest, just like the communicator, and say, Voicera, find me tomorrow's schedule. And it would go out and come back and speak it back to you. Voicera's beta service, at least this one for meetings, is called AVA. And artificial intelligence processes outputs for meetings. And meetings are the most important collaboration tool in the workplace, and more so than email, instant messages, or other collaboration systems. Except they are the most inefficient, underperforming, and effectively siloed portions of our day. And that is the truth. And you go to a meeting and it's so boring sometimes. You fade in and out. So now you're going to have a personal assistant that records the whole thing and takes out all the important snapshots. Our goal is to integrate meetings into the enterprise workflow and dramatically increase the productivity of both in-meeting and post-meeting experiences. Meetings should be the crucibles where ideas are born, tested, evolved, and ultimately gain flight. To overcome concerns about eavesdropping, the AVA system can be added as a participant to the meetings and also announce its presence. The way AVA works is to capture real-time data in a meeting, whether this is an actual business meeting or via a conference call. The information captured by AVA is then interpreted and sent to the Voicera platform, where items for follow-up are then displayed. Oh, this is pretty neat. I could have used this many years ago. And to make the conference call aspect work, Voicera has teamed up with BlueJeans video meeting platform. Content generated here can be used with other platforms used by many businesses, such as Salesforce.com. And I want to bring up, too, so now let's go to this fur hat type thing where they can make real-time avatars or even Baby X. And let's partner something like this up with being able to talk at a meeting and reconstruct all the things that happened in that meeting. And you could have a virtual presence in some sort of online virtual reality. Hence Voicera's meeting insights. I mean, you could even just make an avatar for that matter online, make the same hair, same facial expressions. Here, hence Voicera's meeting insights, actions, and outcomes can be readily integrated into existing enterprise workflows, and this should allow businesses to improve their productivity. And remember, everything you say will be forever recorded in the annals of history. And there's also the possibility of a customer-facing aspect that should the technology be used for external meetings, for instance, between a sales representative and a customer. Now, that would be a really good usage. We used to have some high-flying salespeople who had promised the moon and the sun to customers. And then when it came time for the engineering team to show up there, they'd say, oh, well, your sales guy said that it could do this, this, and this. And we'd go, he did? Really? Well, I don't know about how we're going to do that. Maybe we can figure it out. So another potential application is also with call centers. And this is another decent paying job if you can handle the stress level of a call center. Optimizing agent performance and progress is important as phone agents are often faced with difficult scenarios. Artificial intelligence AVA can assist with this process. And now we are even going to move it into human resources and interviewing. Guys, this is a lot of stuff that is being fed to the machine. Could you imagine having to sit in front of a camera with an AI on the other end and have it ask you questions And then you have to respond about all the things you've done as it is looking at your micro expressions and how you dart your eyes around on the screen, and whether or not you're paying attention as it is explaining things to you. And we also talked the other day about utilizing AI as a judge and a jury. This isn't going to end up good for any of us. Artificial Intelligence Solutions for Human Resources, and that would be the interview, November 24th, 2017, in Digital Journal. Employment Foresight Software is an artificial intelligence solutions for human resource professionals, as well as for in-house general counsel and labor employment law firms. To understand how the application can aid businesses, we spoke with the company Blue Gene Legal. Employment Foresight has a number of uses for human resources and legal teams and businesses. The software makes use of machine learning to identify hidden patterns in judicial rulings, enable users to navigate difficult areas of employment law, and reach more informed decisions around issues such as reasonable notice, employee drug testing, worker classification, and exemptions to overtime. So it's going to get you all the loopholes without having to pay for a real corporate attorney. The platform collects and analyzes the facts and findings from thousands of previous employment cases and uses the information to predict how a court might rule in new circumstances. This is achieved through statistical methods based on machine learning, focusing on the identification of relationships between different factors like the industrial sector, length of employment, and employee's position. This is to gain an insight into the industrial relations process, and it will forever automate it. So, as we are looking at all of this and people warning against artificial intelligence, there was another one that popped out of the woodwork that got my attention and made me kind of giggle in the background. Hillary Clinton has popped her ugly head up to say America is totally unprepared for the impact of AI. Now, isn't she a lawyer by trade? Maybe she's taking a look at how this is coming for her job as well. And she says that we cannot put the genie back into the bottle. How many times have I said that? Hillary Clinton has warned that the U.S. is, quote unquote, totally unprepared for the economic and societal effects of artificial intelligence. Speaking to radio host Hugh Hewitt this week in an interview promoting her recent book, the former Secretary of State says the world was racing headfirst into a new era of artificial intelligence that would affect how we live, how we think, and how we relate to each other. In a short segment near the end of the interview, Clinton told Whit, quote, a lot of really smart people, you know, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, a lot of really smart people are sounding an alarm that we are not hearing. And their alarm is that artificial intelligence is not our friend, she says. Maybe AI is going to bust her on some of her emails. Clinton then mentioned two specific areas of impact, and that would be digital surveillance. Ding, ding. When we know everything about what we know and everything we say and everything we write is, you know, recorded somewhere. Yeah, maybe it is about her trial. And, of course, job automation as well, like for lawyers. What are we going to do when it gets to driverless cars, she asks. It sounds like a great idea, but how many millions of people, truck drivers, parcel people, delivery people, cab drivers, and even Uber drivers, what do we do with those millions of people who will no longer have a job? We are totally unprepared for that, she says. A little confusingly, Clinton's remarks conflated a few separate focuses of AI anxiety. For example, although Elon Musk and Hawking have sounded the alarm bells about artificial intelligence, they're primarily worried about the hypothetical threat from superintelligent computers, not the near-term effects of automation. And while it is true that AI is being used to increase the effectiveness of digital surveillance and maybe even bust her, the trend was established well before the contemporary machine learning boom. See, for example, the use of intrusive surveillance such as PRISM by the U.S. government. And on the economic impact of AI, though, Clinton is right to be worried. For years, economists and academics have been warning that advances in machine learning and robotics are going to have a dramatic effect on job markets. The threat, they say, is not only to skilled and unskilled manual labor, but also to white-collar professionals like in law, ding, and accounting. And although experts disagree on exactly how serious or long-lasting the effects will be, it is clear that a problem is going to form that needs more attention. And one recent study suggests that for every new industrial robot installed in a given commuting area, between 3 and 5.6 jobs are permanently lost. And in the AI competition for supremacy with China, another area of concern for the U.S., experts are unanimous in that the U.S. is in danger of falling behind. This is a particular concern because the Trump administration's determination to cut funding for basic scientific research. And one expert described the proposed Republican budget plans as alarming and counterproductive, while Alphabet chairman Eric Schmidt said earlier this month that the U.S. government needs to get its act together before China overtakes us for good. In the interview, Clinton didn't discuss any of the details specific to the policies she would like to see enacted, but says that the government needs to quickly act. And one thing I wanted to do if I had been president was to have a kind of blue ribbon commission with people from all kinds of expertise coming together to say, what should America policy on artificial intelligence be? She added, we can't put this genie back into the bottle. No, we can't, guys. And this is rolling out in healthcare. I just saw a story today about General Electric partnering with NVIDIA. And this would be General Electric Healthcare for high-tech body scanning. We've talked about this before. Once they have learned all the chinks in the human armor, and they're able to reproduce biological processes that happen within the human body, they will be able to create things that are more and more lifelike every single day, including the brain. They're working on reverse engineering the human brain to make smarter and smarter artificial intelligence. So one of the things I ran across was this new plasmonic device. We've talked about the internet being like tentacles that are getting into every piece of our lives. Well, this new plasmonic device will help the internet keep growing and getting faster and bigger. The volume of data shuttled around the internet is growing unchecked, placing even greater burdens on our communication infrastructure. But a brand new device that takes advantage of the unusual properties of plasmons could tackle the problem by allowing data speeds in the hundreds of gigabits. So we talked about 5G before and the coming Internet of Things. So now let's get data flowing in the hundreds of gigabits so we can be connected to the machine in real time. The latest forecasting by networking giant Cisco predicts that internet traffic will triple between 2016 and 2021 to 3.3 zettabytes a year. That is nearly 3.3 trillion gigabytes of data. And this growth shows little sign of slowing anytime soon. So to keep up with the requiring continuing improvements in speed and efficiency of networks, we need to come up with a new technology. A key component in these networks is called a modulator. And I thought this was kind of interesting because when we were looking at optogenetics and some of the manipulation of the human body, they talked about modulating circuits. Circuits in the brain. Well, the key components to these networks are called modulators, which convert electrical signals into optical ones. And these are some of the ones that DARPA's been tinkering with. This is what allows data produced by an electronic circuit in your computer to be converted into optical data that then can be transmitted over fiber optic cables that make up the backbone of the internet or that connect directly to your brain. I'm going to add to that. Scientists at the ETH Zurich in Switzerland have now built a new modulator capable of speeds in excess of 100 gigabytes per second that is a fraction of the size of previous technologies. And unlike the most electro-optical devices, it can be fabricated entirely of metal, making it compatible with the current chip-making technology. That is what we've shown here is the first complicated optoelectrical device. Almost a circuit that works at high speeds, consumes an extremely small footprint, and is probably among the fastest in the world of its kind. This device's size and speed are both thanks to the fact that it harnesses properties of plasmons, which are quasi-particles that can be thought of as waves or oscillations in collections of charged particles. Now, oscillators are a big part of this puzzle. That is something that I came upon when I was looking at potentially designing some sort of device that can scan the entire electro or electromechanical radio frequency spectrum. And in the same way that throwing a stone into the water causes ripples, shining light at metal can cause oscillations in a sea of free electrons that normally allow electrical currents to flow, known as surface plasmons. Maybe this will be able to disrupt some of this technology. And when light from a fiber optic cable is shown on the input section of the new modulator, this process converts the optical signal into a plasmonic one. So by applying a voltage to a metallic device, the properties of the signal can be modified to encode information in it. The plasmonic signal is then converted back to an optical signal at the device's output and then is fed into another optical fiber cable for onward transmission. I don't know, guys. This is a lot of gobbledygook, but I just know when I was reading it, this sounds like something that might be able to be converted someday to some of the technologies that they are working on with optogenetics. Lufthold, the scientist working on this project, explains that plasmonics to carry out modulation is attractive because it overcomes the biggest limitations of electronic and optical approaches, and that would be speed and size, respectively. So it could be really tiny and really, really fast. The reason that data is shuttled around using fiber optics is because light moves much faster than electricity and has a much greater bandwidth, he says, which allows more data to be carried quicker. But the size of the optical components is limited by the wavelengths of the light they carry, which is measured in hundreds of nanometers. Plasmons propagate at the speed of light, and they don't experience resistance in the way electrical currents do. And they are also not limited by the wavelength of the light source, so the devices can be much smaller than the optical ones. Recent advances in silicon photonics that are beginning to make it into commercial products have brought the size of optical modulators down from centimeters to millimeters in size, perfect for an implant. But the plasmonic approaches like theirs promise to bring that down to even micrometers. There is another scaling down, going from silicon photonics and scaling down to at least a factor of 1,000, he says. And that is important because, as well as making the modulator more compact, the physical rules governing this kind of device means that the smaller it gets, the faster it can be, he adds. Lufthold's group demonstrates an ultra-fast plasmonic modulator 2 years ago, but the device still featured several glass components to guide the optical signals. Their new modulator, on the other hand, is fabricated from a single layer of carefully patterned gold that is just 200 nanometers thick, which enables them to make it even faster and smaller. The new modulator clocked up to a speed of 116 gigabits per second, but the researchers only stopped there because they didn't have the equipment to test the higher speeds. Importantly, the gold could be substituted for copper, so the approach is compatible with the CMOS chip-making process at the heart of modern electronics. Here you have a complete chip system with several different components integrated into a chip, and it is a fantastic development from the point of our practical applications. How long is it going to be before they'll be able to engineer some artificial intelligence into this as well? So while the terabit per second data speeds have been clocked, Zeta says that it is important to compare apples with apples. Those efforts use multi-core fibers and clever tricks like multiplexing, which I've talked about before in the field of fiber optics. It allows you to multiplex multiple channels across a single pipeline, but the commercially available technology today can only manage tens of gigabits when employing a single channel approach used in this experiment. And you'd have to put intelligence on the other end to multiplex. Now, one of the things that was interesting, this is a story that a listener sent to me yesterday, I believe. Thank you, Matthew. This was out of the Optical Society OS. A.org, new approaches use light instead of robots to assemble electronic components. Oh, this past story that we read about plasmons made me think of the story. Its cost-effective optical manipulation platform is suitable for mass production of electronic and light-based devices. An international team of researchers has developed a new light-based manipulation method that could one day be used to mass-produce electronic components for smartphones, computers, and other devices. The cheaper and faster way to produce these components can make it less expensive to connect everyday objects, from clothing to household appliances to the internet or even your brain, advancing the concept known as the Internet of Things. This micro-manipulation technique might also be used to make safer and faster charging replacements for mobile device batteries. And this is utilizing what they call optical traps. And if you guys remember last year, we covered a story that it talked about optical tweezers, and it was making almost like a tractor beam out of beams of light to move very small structures around. Optical traps, which use light to hold and move small objects in liquid, are a promising non-contact method for assembling electronic and optical devices. However, when using these traps for manufacturing, the liquid must be removed, a process that tends to displace any pattern or structure that has been formed using the optical trap. Well, now they detail their method for using an advanced optical trapping system known as optical electronic tweezers to assemble electrical contacts thanks to an innovative freeze-drying method that were developed by Xling Huang Long Zhang, member of the NEALS research group. The liquid could be removed without disturbing the assembled components. Researchers demonstrated the technique by assembling a pattern of tiny solder beads with an optical electrical trap, removing the liquid and then heating the pattern to fuse the beads together, forming electrical connections. They used the solder beads to demonstrate that in the future, these microparticles could be assembled and fused to create electrical connections. So, where's this technology going to go, guys? Robots building their own robots. I think in the future, optical electrical tweezers are cost-effective and allow paralleled micro-manipulation of particles. In principle, we can move 10,000 beads